Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to the Mum and Mum podcast, brought to you as always by Golding Accountancy. There's not going to be much of an introduction this week, firstly because my guest needs no introduction, Mr. Josh Weller, who I think is the funniest person on Instagram, and that's basically why I asked him to come on, because he makes me laugh so much. But I've just come out of hospital. My endometriosis has been playing up, so I've just got home and I'm going to put the episode together in a rush because it's coming out very soon. This is Saturday night and it's coming out. Is it Saturday? Yeah. It's coming out tomorrow morning, so I've got to do this very quickly. So, and I'm not really up to saying much, but I will fill you in more at some point. But I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm having surgery, hopefully. But yeah, enjoy. And if you like Josh Weller, which of course you will because he's amazing, he is playing a gig at the Pleasance in London on the 28th of January. So you can get tickets to go and see him. If you go on his Instagram, I'm going to put links to everything below, but if you go onto his Instagram, it will have a link to a very clever page which gives you all the details about him, and you can book tickets on there. But yeah, that's the 28th of January at the Pleasance Theatre in London, and I am going, so I will see you there. Work. See you in a bit.
Work.
Even though I was told I was doing that all wrong. But if it makes sense to me.
Do you do it to sync audio or just for fun? Okay.
Yeah. I do it for both, to be honest.
Yeah, great.
I especially like it when people just carry on clapping.
Yeah, perfect.
It's like that, it's just one. Where are you? Where do you live?
Bethnal Green.
Oh, do you? Whereabouts?
Well, just off Bethnal Green Road. So, towards the tube station.
Okay, what road?
Yeah,
I'm not
going
to come round.
Well, literally, Bethnal Green Road.
So you live on Bethnal Green Road?
Yeah, whereabouts? Do you know the area?
Yeah, I used to live Old Ford Road.
Okay, so you know where Pellicci's is?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, there.
Oh, no, have you lived there forever?
Like, this is my 9th year in Bethnal Green.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Which in London time, that's like dog years, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's like a thousand years.
I probably lived on Old Ford Road for about 9 years.
Oh, really? When did you leave?
Maybe 10 years. We moved to South Woodford when I got pregnant. We were in a really, really small flat. On, you know, Vicky Park, you know where the fountain is?
Yeah.
There's like those really beautiful big houses, like the tall ones. Behind that, there was like a gate with other houses behind, so on the canal. And we were living in the bottom of one of the houses there. And it was really lovely, but it was tiny. So when I got pregnant, we had to move. And we sadly couldn't afford to stay where we were. So we came to South Woodford. And that's where we stayed.
Okay. Well, what year was that?
I got pregnant. She was born 2011, so it would have been 2010 we moved.
Oh, okay. So we just as I was coming in to gentrify the area.
Yeah. That's why it got so expensive and we couldn't afford to stay there. Yeah.
I can see the way things are because when I moved here, it was like, oh, all these young people coming in and, like, you know, ruining East London.
Yeah.
And now I've been here for a decade and there's young people coming in. I'm like, these fucking young people coming in and ruining.
Yeah.
And I was just as much a part of the problem.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy. Remember, because my family are from, like, Stepney and Bethnal Green originally, and they couldn't wait to get out because it was just so terrible. So it's nice that it is improving, but it does just feel very different.
That's where my mum's from. My mum's from the bottom of Valence Roads, you know, where becomes Whitechapel. Yeah, so that's where she moved when she moved to London.
Yeah.
So, you know, her family are immigrants, and they came over in the 60s.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, this is like her neck of the woods as well. But it is interesting.
How
like
old
Bethnal
is
Green
your
as
mum?
Well. 63.
Okay, oh God, she's young.
And it's interesting here now because, like, Bethnal Green's just never going to be. It's like when they tried to pedestrianise Camden and make it nice, and they spent millions there, and it's still just a crack den of sex shops and Chinese food.
Yeah. Yeah,
and like, yeah. And Bethnal Green's the same. Like, they keep trying to, and there's a lot of like, there are so many. There's so many kids with mullets here now. Like, the mullet's back. In fact, yeah, I know. It's not even back. It was never in. But now there's like the ironic mullet. And
there's a picture of my mullet from when I was 10.
These kids are like 25, like doing them. Yeah. And also, I know that I dressed like an absolute twat when I was their age. So, like, that you have to give them some leeway. But it's interesting in Bethnal Green now because there's, like, I haven't seen a police officer in Bethnal Green this year yet.
Seriously?
There's so much crack going on here now as well. Like, it is very much still Bethnal Green. Like, it's not become, it's not like when they cleaned up New York and, you know, it's still rough here, and there's still a lot of, you know, there's a lot of like young hipsters, but then there's a lot of people buying houses for like £1 million, and there's a lot of broke poor people as well.
Yeah.
So it's a weird mix at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've never been into crack, so I wasn't aware of where the crack houses were. But I think was it Russell Brand's book? Because I think that's where he used to go, is Bethnal Green. And I was like, fucking hell, I lived there and I had no idea.
One of the regulars, like, one of the local Bethnal Green boys, who I don't want to say who he is because people are bound to know him if they're from Bethnal Green. There's literally three guys in Bethnal Green that everyone knows, and he's one of them. But he said to me the other day, and I'm not even going to do his accent because people will know who I'm impersonating. But like, but he said to me the other day that he was like, Bethnal Green, and he said it with like pride. He was like, it does have the best crack in England.
Good,
which is
tonight.
Such a, it's a nice bit of civic pride, that, isn't
it? Yeah, but it's because I've watched Snowfall recently. I hadn't watched it. Have you seen it?
No.
It's about how crack started, basically, in America. It's very good. It's all about, like, the CIA and, but, yeah, I never really knew much about crack, so I've learnt a lot. But that's interesting to know that Bethnal Green's got the best crack.
Yeah, if anyone's
cousins.
Thinking of...
They might know though already. Today I'm joined by the lovely Joshuella, who I can't see, and it's really freaking me out that I'm looking at a screen of myself.
Hang on, let me see if I think I can. Wait, it might just be
because
there's
like some.
Oh, there we go. Ah, it was just a sticker. Sorry, I thought the camera wasn't working.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's brilliant. Oh, the camera's not working. Oh, it's a sticker. Hi! Josh Weller, I think I must have found you through Pip sharing your stuff on Instagram. I would imagine.
The comedy stuff?
Yeah. Well, I reckon, because when I first knew about you when you were making music.
Mm-hmm.
So you were in a band called The Kenneths.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no but need for anyone just... to look that up. It wasn't good.
But you just used to put funny things up. And you do, honestly, you make me laugh so much.
Oh,
your
thanks.
Joke... That's okay. Well, it's nice to tell people when they make you laugh. So you do a lot of stuff with your mum.
Mm-hmm.
And your knock-knock joke with your mum, the I eat one...
I mean... That's not even it's a simple knock-knock joke, which is knock-knock, who's there? I eat poo. You eat poo, which is like a joke that you tell a five-year-old. But my mum has like the best comic timing, and she has no knowledge that she has it. So she's not ever trying to be funny, ever. And for like last week I was around her house and... She bought a pumpkin and for Halloween, and I went, we should carve the pumpkin. And my mum was like, no, we'll just draw a face on it. And I was like, what are you? And she was like, yeah, I'll just draw a face on it. And I was like, mum, you can't draw a face. We have to carve the pumpkin. And she was like, I just can't be bothered to do it. And I'm
it's
not doing justice
work.
To. Yeah, it is. But so just don't buy a pumpkin. Why? If you're just going to put the pumpkin outside so kids know to... And she was like, no. On Halloween, I'm bringing the pumpkin in because I don't want any kids coming over. And then I came down in the morning and she wasn't trying to be funny, but she, with a Sharpie, drawn on a scary face. And the knock-knock joke, she can't do a knock-knock joke. She doesn't understand the construct. She can't go, who's there? And then she doesn't know how to do it. So and it's not... It's not her trying to be funny. She's just funny, you know?
She's hilarious. Well, that is literally the only joke I remember because it just made me laugh so much. And it's obviously very easy to remember. But yeah, so that's my joke. And that I learned.
There's another good...
Thank you.
There's a good knock-knock joke you can do where you go... so you just got to tell your knock-knock joke. So you start the joke.
Knock-knock.
Who's there? There you go. That's
know.
The joke. Yeah, that's the joke. That's it. That you fool the other person. Right? That's a good one.
I'm going to give that to my kids when I pick them up.
There you go.
But, so I wanted to talk to you because you make me laugh so much. I'm not just going to sit here for an hour expecting you to make me laugh, though. But I thought I don't really know that much about you, and I'd like to find out. Please. And also,
right.
You've just done something really exciting, haven't you?
Well,
you're probably doing really exciting things.
Which thing?
Oh. Spitting image stuff.
Oh, I mean...
Could you talk about
that? I think so. I mean, I did some... I've been writing on it. I don't know. The thing is, and I'm not being... I don't know if this is the right word. But is facetious the right word? I don't think it is. But I haven't... I don't know... how many, I don't know if I've even got a sketch on it. I know I did a bunch of writing sessions. I know, okay. I pitched a load of scripts to them.
So and is they that asked how me to work, work on. Do they like contact you and say, we really like your stuff, can you write some stuff? And then.
No, they say, I submitted to be a writer for them last year, didn't get it. And then this year, when they were taking submissions, my agent emailed me going, oh, they're taking submissions again for Spitting Image. So I called my friend Paul, who is my, he's one of my best friends, but he's also, he's in the band. Do you remember the Hoosiers?
Yes, I do.
Tippy Toes, my Tippy Toes, that band, right? And he's the piano player in that band. And I said, look, an opportunity to pitch a Spitting Image, and we wrote a punk song together called Brown Tory, which is how if you want to be racist, get a brown Tory, because if they say it, like if Priti Patel just says the most racist stuff, people are like, well, it's obviously not racist because she's one of them. And we wrote this punk song, and it was like, brown Tory, you want to be racist, use a brown Tory. And it was, and that's what got me the job. And I did a bunch of writing sessions, and we did a few writers rooms, and I think it's wrapped for the season now.
Is that like when you sit in with the other people?
Yeah.
Exciting?
It was really exciting for me as well, as someone who's kind of like, I love, you know, there's a really good documentary episode of South Park, which is just them trying to write an episode.
Okay.
I think it's called 6 Days to Air, and it's a really amazing. Whether you like South Park or not, how they write it on a week to week basis as a topical show is so fascinating.
Yeah.
And so to be on calls and then be in rooms like that, especially with some comedians that I really like admire or grew up watching, and like Al Murray was in one of the rooms, you know, so like, and that's really mad for me. So that side of it was really, really fun. But I don't know if I have any sketches on it, because I just
have some will be in it though, right? Well,
I mean, I'll be honest, I don't have BritBox, so
is that what it's on?
Yeah, so I haven't seen
it. Because I used to watch it when I was a kid with my parents.
I think it was.
What was it? On ITV.
I think it must have been. I honestly couldn't tell you.
It could have been BBC, could it? It
might have been Channel 4.
Maybe Channel 4. Oh, so is it not on normal telly?
No.
It's not. Okay.
Normal telly. No, it's not. No, it's on BritBox, so I haven't seen it. But. I was very grateful for the experience. I'm sure I'll find out. I'm just lazy as well, and I've been gigging a lot, so I just haven't. I'm not in on the evenings, and like I have to. Yeah. I don't have a gig tonight, and I'm so excited to watch Succession. That's going to be my evening.
I've not started watching it yet. Have you started the new series?
I'm on season 3. Yeah.
Yeah, I've not
and it's
started
a great
yet.
It's a great week because there's new Curb Your Enthusiasm as well. So season 11, and it's pretty good so far. The 2 episodes in, and it's like it's really classic Curb.
Classic Curb. So where are you gigging then? In London, or are you out of London?
Yeah,
as well?
Out of London. So it start because I haven't been doing stand up that long. So I feel very lucky that it's become a career. Like actually, when I went on Scroobius Pips. I guess we could just call him Pip on this podcast, but I went on Pip's. What's his real name?
Dave. And that's what I call him, because that's what I always knew him as, and I find it weird not calling him that, but I think it really winds him up, so I do it even
where
more.
Where did Pip come from? Philip?
Scroobius Pip is a Philip Lear poem. I should know this really. And a Scroobius Pip was a thing.
Of course it fucking is. Yeah, of course he is.
So he was like, I'll have that.
But I did his podcast because I did a comic book series in 2018. And that was when I said on the thing, I was like, I've quit music and I'm going to start doing stand up, because a few things happened while I was doing music, and I was like, I'm in the wrong. This isn't what I want to do. I know I want to do stand up.
You'd not done stand-up previously?
No. I started in beginning of 2019.
Wow, you've been on telly and everything.
Yeah, it's been really mad.
That's amazing,
yeah,
it's been isn't mad. It? How quick it's been.
Yeah, it's just, if you mix race now, they'll put anyone on the fucking telly. No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. Oh, God bless that race quota. Oh.
It was like parent card. I'm a single parent.
It's true, isn't it? No. It's everything I sort of wanted to. By the way, for people who are listening to this, you are putting on a giant tub of Vaseline.
I'm onto so your lips used to right doing now. It. This is. I've just always. Really
you know, it's addictive. You know, it's addictive, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, and I'm addicted to it. This is my crack.
It took me so long to get off, and I'm sure it will come back this winter. I'm sure it's going to.
How did you get off of it?
Vaseline didn't work. Carmex didn't work. I tried the really expensive stuff. What worked for me was actually after I brushed my teeth, I would rinse the toothbrush and brush my lips.
Oh, really?
And then also salt is a huge... Way more than the cold for me was salt on my lips. Not if I eat something salty, like a certain crisp or whatever, then I know my lips are just going to go pink.
Yes. And yeah. You
know, and you get that tingling.
Sorry,
I've
just got to let my cat in. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Vinegar affects me as well. But yeah, I guess it is salt and anything spicy.
Yeah.
As well, I can't. And fruit, everything.
Just all the good things.
Just all the good things, yeah.
Yeah. But sorry, I got distracted.
Been funny.
I mean, I think that I didn't. I had a friend in about 2017 who, when I was, you know, I was struggling, broke, really broke, musician, and nothing was happening, and nobody cared. And in looking back on it, I can see it just wasn't very good. But when you've got a dream, it's really hard to swallow your pride and go, oh, no, I'm not good enough at this. And my mate took me aside and was like, you know that you're a comedian. And I was like, what? And it kind of broke my heart, I think, because I knew it was true. And he went, comedy's your métier. And I went, oh, what does métier mean? And
what does it mean? I don't know what it means.
I'm still not sure. And I had been like, I've been dicking around. And this is the thing is like, all of these people, when I started doing Twitter, like all of these people who are way more successful than me started following me. And then they started like bigging me up about how funny I was. And then I'd go, you know, someone, you know, like a pop star or someone would go, oh, this Josh is really funny. And I go, oh, thanks. And I go, hey, my new single's out, and nothing on music, no replies. But then, as soon as I do a joke or like some of the like, I wouldn't really call it trolling, but it was just me messing with people. Twitter used to be a very different place, where there was a level of acceptance towards sort of sarcasm and nuance. And Twitter now is like walking past a pub, and everyone in the pub is fighting, and the pub is on fire, you know. And back 10 years ago, I was just dicking around on the internet and on Instagram as well. And then it kind of, and then I started a punk band. And for a while, that kind of the anarchic, you know, sense of social media and the anarchic punk thing kind of worked. But then obviously, in all honesty, the punk band wasn't very good either. So, so I didn't really start comedy. I didn't go, right, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. I just sort of. Was lost. So I like being on a stage, and everything I sort of wanted to happen in music, the ease that you read about, you know, like in Bob Dylan's book, like he starts his book, he's like, and I signed on the contract, and I knew that my life was going to change. And you read the book, and I'm like, yeah, but how did you get to that point, dickhead? Like, like that's the important bit. And all of the stuff that you want, that natural, like, oh, let's sign that guy. And like, I feel like in comedy, I've been so lucky that I haven't really had to try for any of that stuff. And that's what I really wanted to happen in music. So, and I also think once you've sort of failed at your dream, and it's like you do sort of feel invincible, I think.
Yeah.
Because I've got nothing to lose now. Like, I didn't think I'd be a comedian, so everything's a bonus at this point.
But you're so funny. It's weird, isn't it? Like, you are naturally, you're really funny. And you think of really funny things. It's weird that you never really thought that. So what led you, have you always been musical? Is that what you wanted to be?
I think that's what the problem was. There's like, you know, I would gig with people and you'd see some people. I remember the first time I saw Marcus Mumford sing.
Yes.
And the guy from Mumford & Sons. And it was before, I think it was before they were even a band. And we all kind of came up together on this in this circuit of gigs in London. And I remember him opening his mouth. And I remember my brain going, oh, that's what talent is, you know? I was like, oh, because it just fell out of his face, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so in the regard of, like, I think what I am is a massive music fan and a medium music maker, I think.
Yeah.
And Pip and I have talked about this, like, how little we even think about music nowadays.
Really?
The weird thing is... I don't think about making it, because I just wake up in the middle of the night and writing jokes. I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh, okay, oh, I can link that joke to that bit. And even when I was a musician in the studio, I was always trying to make the people laugh I was in the studio with, and I should have been trying to make the song good, you know?
Yeah.
And my family was really, had like such a mad eclectic taste in music. I think that's what set me up so well for being like I know a lot about music. I watched the video this morning of Ray Charles teaching Jamie Foxx how to play the piano on when they did that movie, and that's just, it's just, I just suck it up. I can't stop learning about things, and I want to know everything about music.
Did you grow up on then? What influence did you have?
It wasn't really, it was just everything. Like, my mum's from a French speaking country, so my mum's Mauritian, so there was lots of French music, and then my mum also loved glam rock.
Nice.
Like The Sweet and bands like that, but then she also loved you know, like Young, Gifted and Black, and like she liked pop music from her childhood, you know?
Yeah.
And then my dad's the same, but my dad loves you know, whether it's like Paul Simon or Elvis Costello or Squeeze, and my dad just has my dad loves like sea shanties, and my dad was in a shanty band and a folk band, and like, so it was just the CD collection was, because I used to steal their CDs and take them back to the Virgin Megastore, because you didn't need a receipt back then.
Yeah.
If the CD was in good nick, you could get store credit. So I'd go through their CD collection and be like, okay, they look like they haven't listened to this for a while, and then I'd take the train into the city, go to the Virgin Megastore and be like, oh, I've got bought this for my birthday and I don't like it, and then swap it for like a Blink 182 CD or something. And so it was always eclectic. And then I think just everyone around me as well. Like, there was my cousin used to come to our house in the summer and live with us, and he loved hip hop and Britpop. And then my sister loved boy bands and hip hop. And so it was just everything. It was just all everything. Yeah. And then I met these two guys. I was really into punk and rap. And then, I met these two guys when I was about 16 who were really, they were about 10 years older than me, and they were really into jazz music, and they kind of took me under their wing and showed me that you didn't need to scream to get emotion across in a song, which I did. Yeah. I just thought was impossible. So then by the time I was sort of 17, I was listening to like Cole Porter and all the sort of New York Tin Pan Alley musicals writers and stuff. And then because my grandparents, when I was a kid, loved musicals, it kind of, I remembered all the songs, but I'd never really heard them interpreted as jazz songs. So it was, you know, it's just everything and anything, really.
Yeah. It's nice that you grew up with so much music and so much variety. Mm. So what did do you, when did you start playing? Did you, is anyone a musician in your family?
Just my dad. But my dad sort of...
Okay, cool.
Very much, yeah, very much a hobby. And then I taught myself how to play the drums. And then I had lessons for two years. And then in those 2 years was like, oh no, I want to... I bought my mate's, he had like a copy of a Fender Stratocaster, a Hofner, like a cheap Japanese guitar. And I bought that off him and learned how to play like three chord punk songs. And that was, but to be honest with you, I never learned anything more.
Oh, really?
And that was sort of, no, I'm terrible. I'm genuinely a bad musician. But I that's how I sort of, that's how I kind of started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you form the band? When did you form your first band?
When I was 12. And we were called the Opposable Thumbs. And then when I was 13... Yeah, horrible. Then 13, I started a band called Your Loss.
Nice.
Which was a punk band. And then I left that when I was 17 and... had a solo thing, and then the solo career, I got signed to Universal when I was about 22.
Right. So for a while,
I just gigged.
Yeah.
I just gigged so much and had such a stupid haircut and wore a bow tie and really tight trousers. I just looked like a fucking nutter. I had like, my hair was like a 2 foot high mohawk. It was so weird and such a stupid. It was like, looking back on it, I was very much trying to cover up the lack of songwriting skills by going, look at me. I was like, and I would like, I'd wear makeup on stage and like, I'd tap a tambourine with my foot. And like a bass drum, I had a floor tom on the side of the stage, and I was just trying to do. I was like Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins. I was just trying to do everything to sort of stop people listening to the mediocre song. But then, so I thought that would be a career for a bit, and then I got dropped, and then I worked in a toy shop for 4 years, and then I started a punk band, and then I thought that, and then that sort of looked like it was going to go for a bit. We got quite lucky and got on this thing in America called the Warped Tour.
Yes.
And then we got like a big American manager, and then, but it just didn't really, just didn't work out. And then 4 years, that was 2014, 15, yeah, 4 years into that, that was when I sort of sacked it in and started doing comedy.
So what made you decide that you didn't want to do that anymore?
I think once, it was a combination of things. Like, firstly, I remember we were doing a gig. We were opening for Leanne Le Havas at the Albert Hall, the Royal Albert Hall.
Wow!
And it was mad. A lot of people walked out, and and I remember walking on stage thinking, and it's a mad venue as well, because not only is it not only are you playing in the Royal Albert Hall, just the way that as you walk down the tunnel backstage onto the stage, they have photos of like all the people. It's like Aretha Franklin, Frank Sinatra, Ray Charles, Adele, and you're like, for fuck's sake, guys, like, what are you? No, don't do that. I walked on, I remember walking down that tunnel, and I was thinking, oh, I can't wait to tell some jokes in between the songs.
Really?
And and something in my brain that day just was like, oops, I'm in the wrong. Yeah. Oops. And and then also, that's the sort of romantic version of it. Also, I'd been doing it for 12 years. Nobody cared. We couldn't sell out like we couldn't sell out a 100-cap venue in London. Our first manager dropped us. Our second manager wasn't doing anything. Our booking agent dropped us. Like, I had 70, I think I had 83 pounds when the band split up. Like, and it's like, after you've been in a van cold for 10 years, I was talking to my mate around that time whose band, his band had got really big. And, he was saying, like, he sort of came in with this sort of idealistic, view on it. And he just went, mate, he's like, you know, he's like, you shouldn't quit just because other people are doing well, which hadn't entered my mind. He was like, if you love it, keep doing it. And then I said to him, I was like, mate, if you, do you remember your first tour in like a beat up splitter van, you know, where the heating didn't work and there was a broken window and the, you know, every, you know, the transmission kept breaking. And he was like, yeah, yeah, I remember that. And I went, well, now you're on a tour bus. If it was 12 years later and you were still in that van, do you still think you'd love it? And he was like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I think that there is something about, like, I just tried for so long. And after a while, I think it's actually quite healthy to go, okay, why hasn't this worked? And why did it not be the thing I wanted it to be? And I think you can either come out of that and blame the world or blame the industry and be really embittered, or you can kind of just channel it into really positive things as well. Like, failing is really good for you. It's really good for you.
That's how you succeed. You can't succeed without failing. 100%.
Yeah, and a little bit of trauma's healthy.
Gives you something to write about, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
There's the music industry's hard. Because I used to make music, and I think my very first writing session, I was writing with people that had written for the Sugar Babes. They were quite established. And he was like, it's going to be at least 10 years. And I was like, what? I've just got a writing session with people that have made music for famous people. I thought this was it. Like, you know, I'm going to get signed now and everything's going to be fine. And it was like, no, it's going to be at least 10 years. And I was like, oh. And then it was 10 years of gigs and shit happening. And it, at the end of it, I was like, there were so many things that were going to happen and then didn't. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Cause it's just.
Which is the, which iteration of the Sugar Babes was that?
The first one they wrote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he wrote the middle eight.
Oh, that's a bit I don't remember.
He did Amy Winehouse's first album.
Frank.
He wrote a few of those. Yeah.
I did a gig and I host a night every Wednesday at the Camden Comedy Club, and I bombed so hard. Two people in the audience shouted, "I hate you!" last week, because. Bear in mind, we were in Camden, and I hadn't written any jokes. I just said, I was like, does anyone else think Amy Winehouse is a bit overrated? And like, I said it in Camden.
Oh my god!
Holy! Oh my god! Yeah. It was, people were, no. It was. I've never said anything on stage that was met with such vitriol. And I've said, you know, it's nice to try and push things, but that was like, people just, no, they weren't. Absolutely not.
Not in Camden. I mean, to be fair, I don't know if you could get away with that anywhere, but definitely not in Camden.
What I found funny about it was that I just find it funny when tourists come to Camden to go on the Amy Winehouse tour, but she recorded nothing in Camden.
Is there an Amy Winehouse tour in Camden?
Of course there is. Yeah, it's like, what, here's the Hawley Arms.
Just go to the fucking pub. Here's the...
Yeah.
There you go.
And it's just funny to me, because like, it would be like a Beatles fan. Like, they go to Abbey Road. They go to where they made the music. Yes, whereas with Amy Winehouse, it's like people go to where she got high, which I find so weird.
Yeah. But that's really what she was, made her famous, wasn't it? Because that first album, because I was kind of in with the people that were working with her. So I had the demos and I was like, oh my God, she's the most amazing thing in the world. She's going to blow up. But the first album didn't really do anything.
It was a big critics. It got nominated for a Mercury.
Yes, it was.
It might even have won it. I don't remember.
I can't remember if she won. But it didn't. But when the photo started going in the paper about her being a state, then Back to Black.
Yeah,
massive.
But that's, I mean, I just feel so, it's what we do as well. We champion the underdog. We make them a star. We get up in their face so hard that we watch them lose it to the point where they either crash their car in a tunnel or OD. And then we would pretend that they were a god and we had nothing to do with their demise. It's just like, you know, we, like the British public are just as responsible for Amy Winehouse's death as the press. Because we don't need to eat that up. Yeah. It's disgusting. Sorry, I know this is meant to, yeah.
No, it is, but it's awful.
It's what we do. It's what we, and it's like, you know, I find that, yeah, I don't know, I find that stuff, yeah, pretty amazing that no one accepts responsibility, but it's like, it's happened so many times. Yeah. We did it with Britney as well, you know?
Yes, yep. I named my first plant, my firstborn, after Britney. Poor Britney.
Well, her name's Britney.
Yeah, she's dead now. it's a piece. It got fucking massive, and when I'm out to move, I couldn't take it with me, sadly. But I've got another one, so it's all right. So when you were walking down the tunnel, and were like realised that you wanted to tell jokes more than make music, how? Because your success has been really quick, hasn't it? So what did you have?
I mean, I'm people that. I don't know if I'd call it a success, but it's going the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When did you get the idea for start doing the commentary over the videos?
That was... I've been thinking about doing more of those. Yeah, I was thinking about doing more of those recently.
They were my favourite.
Thank you. It's like a fake music director. I pretend I directed old music videos is the idea. And I play the video. And I stopped doing it because Instagram started taking them down.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So I've started popping them up on YouTube because I've got a thing. I'm doing like a show that I'll put on YouTube. And who knows, it probably won't become anything. But if it does, I want to have all the videos there ready. I started doing it because I saw a Sting video, and he had a song. My old housemate showed me a Sting song called "I'm So Happy I Can't Stop Crying," and I encourage anyone to look it up because it's Sting with a mohawk and a goatee wearing leather trousers on a horse, and then an alien, and then there's a cowboy flying a spaceship, and like an alien comes down, and then they have a line dance, and it's like, I just couldn't figure out how that, I was just lying awake in bed for like a week going, how did that, just obsessing over it. Yeah. And that's another thing, you know, as well, is like, it comes from like a fanatical obsession with whatever the thing is that's on my mind. I was thinking about a movie, Rain Man recently. And I was like, how did they get that over the, like that, when you break that film down to its plot points, it's a reprehensible film. Like, he kidnaps his autistic brother, holds him hostage. His girlfriend like sexually assaults the autistic brother. And then he gets the money at the end.
Yeah.
Like, it's a mad film. And I think that's where the director's commentary came from, because I was like, okay, well, it would be fun. It would be funny to pretend. And then, you know, there are so many amazing music videos to that you can just that write the comedy themselves.
Yes, yeah.
So that's sort of where it came from. But I don't know. I was thinking about, I saw a Ronan Keating video the other day and was like, oh, I could do that one. That would be funny.
So the one where he keeps dying. I don't know. I've not seen that. When did you do your first stand-up gig?
I think it was the very end or very beginning of 2018, 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
So really good timing with regards to COVID.
The band split up.
Oh,
yeah, it was, I did it for a year And then everything for a year and 3 months, and then everything shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, but I'm, to be honest with you, it even with the pandemic, I still feel like I've been, you know, like I've sort of climbed up that ladder far quicker than I probably should have done. So
how did you get your first gig?
I reached out to a friend of mine who's a comedian who sent me a load of open mic nights.
Okay, yeah.
And I went to Shepherd's Bush, and I still smoked at that time, and I walked from Shepherd's Bush station like 15 minutes down Goldhawk Road to the pub, ordered a beer, smoked a cigarette, and I was so proud of myself. I was like, oh my God, this is the hardest bit, I think, is it won't get harder than this, because
yeah,
you know, I'm doing it now and I know I'm going to keep doing it. And then I realized I was in the wrong pub and ran to a different pub and missed my slot. So that was the first one.
Oh, that's brilliant. How did you write your stuff for the, did it take you a long time to write? Did you know what?
No, the first stuff was, I mean, I honestly, the two things I remember from my first gig is my friend's face, where he was like, oh God. And then I remember the other thing, weirdly, that I remember is I have no memory of the jokes. I remember the first line.
Yeah.
And then I remember I just ate my balls for 5 minutes, you know, and 5 minutes is such a long time when you've never done it.
Yeah.
That was the first.
Did people laugh?
The first. No.
No.
God, no. No. No one really? Laughed till about my, I think it was around like gig 9. And it was the first time where I felt like I killed. And then I walked home listening to the recording of the gig in my head. And I was like, okay, I think I understand stand up now. And then I just didn't have a good gig again for like 8 months. But it's one of those things where it's just, you know, you do it 6-7 nights a week, really, to get, it's, there is no way to get good at it other than just doing it and just getting punched in the face over and over.
How can you do that? How can you stand there? How can you do that? I said, I'd die.
I think the main thing you learn is that, like, I even last night's gig, you know, I was, you're trying new material, so it's just not, you know, it's not going to work. You know that it's like a room of like construction, and you hope that the audience isn't going to be too judgmental and expect it to be, you know, live at the Apollo or, yeah, you know, like a Netflix special. But I think it's just, you just have to not take the gig off the stage with you, I think.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's something that I've learned over, you know, 12 years as a musician, taking every moment, yes, off stage with you,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah,
and I,
yeah,
think, again, like, I think just because it's, comedy is just something for me that I just didn't ever think. So I'm just so grateful that, to be honest, I'm also grateful I don't have to pack anything up afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's, I just, there's no train, there's no splitter, yeah, van full of stoned people. There's no beer bottles like clanging together as you drive 4 hours to another shitty travelodge. You know,
yeah,
and there's no, like, you don't, you park the van somewhere where you pray it's not going to get broken into and all your gear is going to get stolen.
Yeah.
You know, like that, all of it's such a huge bonus. Even if I suck and am not funny, I still get to go home going, ah, it's just a notepad. That's all I got to take home with me, you know? So.
So how often do you write? Are you always writing?
Yeah. Yeah, all it's I'll it's constantly in my notes on my phone.
Yeah.
So if you have an idea, or you have a way to link a joke that pops in, or you have a concept, and pop that in, and then I have a Google Doc just so I can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
And then I'll type up the ideas. So I have like three documents, which is like old bits, current bits, and new bits. And then I'll write all the new bits out, and as just sort of a random, half a paragraph to five pages of like all the information I can get on it. And then another really good thing for me is talking to other comedians and just finding, because everyone finds things funny in different ways. And, like I was talking to I've got a bit about, I'm trying to work on this bit about, the movie Annie. And I just find it really funny. I find it really funny that they never address why that guy wants to adopt her. Like, he's just like this 50-year-old millionaire dude.
But wasn't it to make him more, give him more of a family appeal, I thought.
Right? It's very tenuous. And I was explaining it to a comedian friend. I was like, and also I was like, his name's Daddy Warbucks. It's like three red flags. All of those words are red flags. And then my friend who's a comedian just went, she was like, when did Annie learn to tap dance? I was like, that is hilarious. Like, how did she? She's just like this 10-year-old orphan who just happens to be amazing at tap. And so that's always a good thing as well, is just to sit in a room. And then you write it out, and then you kind of ish try and learn it. And then I'll bullet point in a notebook the sort of triggers of what to talk about, the kind of chapter points for each joke. And then you go on stage and say it, and then you record it, and you listen back to the recording, and you kind of just do that over and over, and you finesse, and you lose words, and you learn about the commodity of, you know, which is the most powerful word to get the laugh. Is it clementine or orange or satsuma? You know, which is the funniest one? Which one? Some of them will get bigger for some reason. You know, why did the number 11 get a laugh when 7 didn't? Like, there's, you know, all these weird things about the sound of words that people find funny. And also, like, the other answer is I don't know as well, because I'm so new to it as well. I'm still figuring it out. I think a comedian who's been doing it 10 years would give you a much better answer than that. But hopefully in 10 years I'll be able to explain it.
So if people want to see you, are you literally performing every night, pretty much?
I mean, every night I'm doing, new material stuff. And then I'm starting to do some previews. So if they go on my Instagram, there's links to tickets to shows. And then on the weekends, I tend to be up and down the country from the new year, especially. But all the tickets will be on my website. I don't have a website, but I have a link to tickets.
Oh, what, on Instagram or whatever?
Yeah. So in my Instagram and my Twitter, there's like the link is just to my, you know, like a holding page, and there's a ticket site there. Yeah.
How did you set that up?
Music Glue is the website.
Okay.
So they're like a host ticketing website, but you can build like a pretty good website from there.
Yeah.
And then I'll get sent like the link to the tickets for the website from my agent, and I just link it to the. But Music Glue is pretty good for that stuff. Yeah, okay. And it's free. You're welcome.
How did you get? So if you got a comedy agent.
Hmm.
How did you get a comedy agent?
Well, it was. It kind of, I had a few things happening that, like, there was bits of stuff I'd done on telly. There was some writing I'd done that had done some stuff. There was a bunch of viral stuff. And then Twitter, like, I just got a DM one day from Twitter in, like, 2019 that just said, like from a DM from at Twitter. And I was like, this is weird. And they asked if they could use one of my jokes for their Valentine's Day campaign.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I just thought, sure. And I didn't think anything of it. And then in February, it just was on like this one line joke I wrote on Twitter in like 2016 was just on billboards all over the world. Yeah. Like giant billboards.
Yeah.
And
I remember that, because wasn't it the Tube or something?
Yeah, yeah. It was on like, yeah, it was, yeah, it was, yeah. it was at like Oxford Circus. And then the thing is they used a bunch of tweets, but for some reason, for their campaign, and when any, and luckily for me, all the seemed like mine was the one that people put on the internet.
Yeah. What joke was it?
See, I didn't even think it was that funny. It was just, it said something like, for Valentine's Day, I'm standing outside restaurants watching couples go in shouting, you've moved on quickly. Or something like that.
Yeah.
And I still think, I even when it was on the billboard, I was like, I could have worded that better. And then a guy, a songwriter, reached out to me, and he was turning a very popular Netflix show into a very popular Netflix show into a West End musical. And I had been going in and was just singing on the demos of the musical just to help, just as a favor for him.
Yeah.
I'm saying that, I just realized he never paid me. And and then he asked me to write the book, like this. He was like, have you ever written a script for a musical? And I just lied and went, yep, yeah, of course. Yeah. How hard can it be?
All the time.
And so he asked me to write the book. And then the pandemic happened. And the show, I can't say what it is, but it was like a very dystopian show. And then it just became very apparent in the lockdown that people probably aren't going to want to see a dystopian musical after coming out of a real life dystopian situation. Yeah. So I kind of just, all that stuff. And then one agent reached out to me, and then one really big agent reached out to me. And then I was chatting to my mate, and he went, oh, you should talk to this girl. And, I met a few people, and she was the one that, made me laugh. And she was the one that was like, I just liked her the most. I just liked her, period, actually.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how that happened. Again, that's like a dream situation. Like, I would have given my left foot, as a musician to have had something have happened that easily, you know? And to me, it just reaffirms that I'm doing the right thing, I think.
Yeah. You know? Well, you must be, to have got on so well. You must be.
I hope so. Well, I'll give it time. I could still fuck it up. I could still ruin it.
Watch his face. Oh, thank you so much. I'll obviously share links to everything.
Great. Well, thank you for having me. It's nice that we finally did this.
I know.
Sorry that it took so long to pin me down. I'm just very disorganized. It took like 20 minutes to even get the Zoom link to work.
We're just taking the fucking sticker off the camera, really. All right. Wait there, but we'll say bye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Josh Weller.
Bye.
Hi. Now, wasn't that funny? You'll remember that knock-knock joke for the rest of your life as well. I did try the other one on my daughter, and she was a bit like, it's not funny. I think it's funny. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed it, and yeah, check him out. He's doing loads of gigs, actually. He's gigging all the time, so if you can't make the Pleasance Theatre, then there is others. But if you follow him on the socials, firstly, it will cheer up your day because he makes you smile every day, and secondly, you'll find out when else he's playing. But yeah, hopefully I'll see you at the Pleasance on the 28th of January. That's enough of a plug, right? And yeah, I'll see you next week. Oh, there's a new episode of the Epic Mum Chat as well on our YouTube. So, Epic Mum Chat on YouTube. And this one is about not having to like your ex when you've got kids. Obviously, you still got to deal with them. But yeah, it's about not having to like them. It's a good one. But yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Sorry, this is all a bit meh. But talk to you soon. Lots of love. Stay safe and sane.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello? Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.